dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires. And may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit, and infuse in me true life, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. So welcome to volume 20. We're making progress. So I want to begin with September the 17th, 1926. And actually, we start with a very good message, and that is you have to know your place in the greater scheme of things. If you don't know your place, you're not going to be able to cooperate with whatever the designer of the great scheme of things actually had in mind in bringing you into existence. Some of you know I like jigsaw puzzles, and if a piece is not in its place, it absolutely distorts the entire pattern. So we're going to be brought into a message tonight in which if we slip out of the divine will, we actually bring chaos into the whole pattern. I think it's a very good place to begin. Know your place. Louise is going to be talking about her extraordinary confessor and the one who was responsible for publishing the first 10, at least 10 volumes of these writings. And that's Annibale di Francia, or in Italian, Annibale di Francia, between 1919 and 1927. They were the times he was looking after Louisa. So let's begin. And Louisa begins with a prayer. My Jesus, I invoke your holy will, that it itself may come to write on paper the most penetrating and eloquent words, the most fitting terms to make itself understood, in such a way as to portray the kingdom of the supreme fiat with the most beautiful colours, with the most refulgent light, and with the most attractive characteristic, so as to infuse a magnetic force and a powerful magnet, which is the same thing, into the words in which you make me write, such that no one will be able to resist letting himself be dominated by your most holy will. The very important thing here, that is, words can be empty. Words can be empty of real life and real content. If you've ever heard a dead homily or sermon, you know what I'm talking about. The words were right. The beginning was right. The story was right. It ended up right. And yet it's dead and you get absolutely nothing out of it. So Louisa asks that the divine will put such magnetism into this message that we will be drawn almost against our will. It's probably better to say against our resistance, that we will be drawn into a beauty so great and a wonder that is beyond our ability to grasp. And so she always turns to Blessed Mother for help. So she said, and you, my mother, true sovereign queen of the supreme fiat, do not leave me alone. Come to guide my hand and give me the flame of your maternal heart. And while I write, keep me under your azure mantle, your blue mantle, that I may fulfill all my beloved Jesus wants of me. So there's a very good headline there for all of you who are teaching others, that before your class, that you would ask the Lord to put into your communication with others the life that will actually draw the others, so that your passing on, even of the divine will information, would not actually be dead. So Louisa said, I felt all invested in the supreme volition, which drawing me into its immense light, because God is light and the divine will is this light, made me see the order of creation. This is where we're going. How each thing remained at the place assigned by the Creator. Now, if you're told right at the very beginning that each thing remained at the place, you're going to be told that human beings are the only ones who refuse to stay in the place given to them. My mind wandered and was enraptured in seeing the order, the harmony, the magnificence, and the beauty of all creation. And my sweet Jesus, who was with me, told me, "My daughter, everything that came out of our creative hands, each created thing was assigned its place and its distinct office." Now notice that the divine will not only created, but created with a particular purpose, and that each thing was created to bring that purpose into creation. So if you get out of that order, you will never be able to accomplish what the divine will wanted. So each one is assigned their place and its distinct office, and all of them remain at their place, magnifying with incessant praises. That is Psalm 19, verses 1 to 6. So they magnify with incessant praises the eternal fiat that dominates them, preserves them, and gives them new life. Now, this is the thing that's interesting. The life you have is renewed at every moment. Now, the Psalms and the prophets of Israel are very clear about that, that our lives and our spiritual lives, our spirit is renewed every day. So the way they preserve themselves ever beautiful, whole and new, lies in the motion of the supreme fiat dominating in them. So we've been told that if they stay in their place, they remain beautiful, they're preserved and all the rest of it. And now we're told that the way they are preserved is that they allow the motion of the divine will its operation. Now, this is all preparation for what's coming. Man also was assigned his place. Now we come to the bad news. You know what's coming. His office of sovereign, because he was made Lord of the earth in Genesis 1:28, over all created things, with the difference that with all other things created by us, they remained just as God had created them, without ever changing, neither increasing nor decreasing. My will giving man supremacy over all the works of our hands. So there is the Lord of the earth. And wanting to show off even more with him in love, gave him the office to grow continuously in beauty. Now, this is what the Lord is expecting of us. And you really need to mark this. God gave us the office to grow continuously in beauty, in sanctity, in wisdom, in richness, to the point of raising him to the likeness of his creator. Now, there is a key there. I keep on telling you that there are keys all over these writings, keys in which you can discern where you're at, whether you have made any progress and so on. And one of them is you have to be growing in wisdom. There's very little wisdom in the world today. So someone who is wise is actually noticeable, growing in wisdom, because wisdom is the very first one of the gifts that is mentioned by Isaiah. Wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, and the fear of the Lord. The description of the God-man when he would come upon the earth. And beauty is extremely important because everything to do with sin is ugly. And it makes human beings ugly. You will see on many a face written the ugliness of the life that they're actually living. You can look on a very holy person whose features may be actually quite plain. And this person whose features might be quite plain actually has a radiant beauty coming through. And the Old Testament scriptures speak wonderfully about the beauty of holiness, because the beauty of holiness is the harmony, the order, and everything that the Lord is talking about here. So this is the key for us to test. Have we moved? Has there been any change in us? And you come to a richness of spirit. When you deal with people who are worldly and who have no faith and are living sinful lives, there's no richness of spirit there. You can discern an emptiness, and even worse, depending on what they're doing. So we have to grow continuously. There's no end to this growing. It will continue eternally. In beauty, in sanctity, in wisdom, in richness, to the point of raising us to the likeness of our Creator. Always provided, however, that he would let himself be dominated and guided to give the supreme fiat free field in order to form its divine life in him. Everything is dependent on letting the divine will actually operate in us, because only the divine will can produce this beauty, this sanctity, this wisdom, this richness in us. Okay. And so everything is sitting on an if clause, if you will allow. You see, you could have studied the whole 20 volumes with me, for example, and not shifted an inch. You might enjoy the readings. You might enjoy the explanation. You may enjoy the experience. That's no guarantee you've actually moved. And so it's very important for us to look at that right now. To get you to look at it, I want to give you Psalm 82, verse 6. I want to give you John 10, 34, Psalm 32, verse 8, and Psalm 73, 24. I won't read them for you because I want you to read them. I've already read them. We have to give the Lord freedom to actually do his divine work inside of us. And this will enable him to form this continuous growth of goods and beauty with happiness without end. Part of this key is something that you will already have experienced, and that is the more deeply you go into the divine will, the more content you are. The more you experience, I've arrived. There's nothing out there in the world that can make me happy. I'm already happy. There's this sense of having come home. That's terribly important. And the dissatisfaction that you find in people in the world is that they are like Cain wandering around the earth. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they're going, if they're going anywhere. They don't know if life has a purpose. They don't know why they're actually alive. There are some people who don't know why they get up in the morning. It's really sad. There's a whole world of difference between those who have the privilege of living in the divine will and reaching the fullness of life and those who are literally wandering souls, which is really sad. But one of the signs is that your inner contentment and sense of having arrived home gets deeper and deeper and deeper. In fact, Jesus said, without my will dominating, there can be neither growth, nor beauty, nor happiness, nor order, nor harmony, as you see all around you in society today, no matter what country you live in. Since my will is the origin, the master, and the beginning of the whole work of creation, wherever the divine will reigns, it has the power of preserving its work beautiful. It alone has the power. We cannot make ourselves beautiful. We can plaster all kinds of stuff on our faces. We can wear the most exotic clothes, but you could be as ugly as hell inside those very expensive clothes. Only the divine will can preserve everything beautiful, just as God actually issued it. But where the divine will does not exist, the communication of its vital humours in order to preserve the work that comes out of our hands is missing. So the essential thing for enabling that person who has been created to reach the fullness of life, it's missing. And you can see it in people's lives. You can see the emptiness that's in them. It's really sad. So do you see then the great evil it was for man to withdraw from my will? So all things, even the smallest ones, even the creepy crawlies, they all have their place. It can be said that they are in their home, that they are secure and no one can touch them. Now, that's what I've just said up above, that we who go deeper and deeper into the divine will have this sense of coming home. And you have this sense of being secure, because you are. And you have this sense of harmony and peace, and that there's beauty coming into your life. So Jesus said they possess abundance of goods because that divine will which flows in them possesses the source of all goods. So you stop looking to material things to make you happy. You stop looking to relationships to make you happy, human relationships to make you happy. You're happy within yourself. And if you have this happiness within yourself, that will flow out from you into all your relationships, and you can make other people happier than they are. They are all in the order, the harmony, and the peace of all. So it is when we are in the same position as the creation out there, the stars and the galaxies in the sky and the plants and the animals in the earth and everything else in the earth that keep their place. When we are actually also in our place, then the whole thing is in harmony. That's where Romans 8:19 will be fulfilled, that everything will be restored. On the other hand, by withdrawing from my will, man lost his place. That's Genesis 3:23. He remained without our home, exposed to dangers. As I say, that's like Cain wandering around the earth. All can touch him to harm him. Now, all is first of all, the problems within yourself. Secondly, that nature won't actually cooperate with you, as we see today on a daily basis, that nature is actually rebelling against humanity. And the demonic forces are free to attack as well. So all can touch him to harm him. The very elements are superior to him because they possess the supreme will, while he possesses a degraded human will, which can give him nothing but miseries, weaknesses, and passions. I presume you've proved that to yourself and you need no explanation. And because he has lost his origin, that is everything that God had created in the beginning. He's lost his origin, his place. He remained without order and he remained disharmonized from all. We would say nowadays out of sync with everything. Okay. Now, all you need to do is go to the book of Genesis chapter 3 and you'll get that in the lovely childlike way in which the events are related there. He enjoys no peace even within himself. That's one of the reasons why families are breaking down, why society is breaking down, why the world itself and all its systems is falling apart. And that's because each human being seems to lack this basic peace and harmony within themselves. If we have this, you see, peace is I am at one with God, I am at one with myself, and therefore I am at one with my neighbor. Therefore I can fulfill the great law, I'm making an L shape, that is to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your being, and you love your neighbor as yourself. And you'll find that in Genesis chapter 4, when they broke the relationship with God in Genesis chapter 3, you get the first murder in chapter 4. That's just the logic of the thing. So Jesus said, it can be said that he is the only being wandering in the whole of creation, and it started with Cain. Cain was sent wandering throughout the earth, and he realized himself that wandering throughout the earth was very dangerous, and so he asked for protection, and that's why God gave him a mark to protect him. And this idea of a tribal mark is still used in places like Africa today. And a tribal mark is a mark of protection. Anybody would protect you. I remember when I lived in Africa as a missionary in a rural area that if a small child got lost, any woman in his or her tribe would take care of that child. They would just simply look at the marks. And if they saw that the mark meant it was another tribe, they would bring the child to somebody in that other tribe because children were their greatest treasures. I remember asking a man once how wealthy he was. And he told me he had 6 children. He said, God gave me 6 children. That's my wealth. That's exactly what the Old Testament says. And it's all over the Psalms as well, that your wealth is actually in your children. The arrows you shoot forward into the future. That's what they're called in the Old Testament, children. The arrow that goes into the future. It's a wonderful idea. So when man is out of sync with God, he's out of sync with himself and with the whole of creation. And he's like Cain. Now, because I've mentioned Cain, I want to mention something else. And that is when the Jewish people finally rejected their Messiah at the Passion of Jesus, when their leadership declared openly and publicly for everyone to hear, we have no king but Caesar. They were finally rejecting their Messiah. They were rejecting all that the prophets had told them that God was giving them as pure gift. And they ended up as the wandering Jews for 1947 years. It's really sad. There are consequences to being out of sync with the divine will, and the consequences are great. So in a general sense, Jesus says that the whole human race is wandering because at this particular time that we're living in, the whole human race appears to be out of sync with God, except for a small remnant in every country. So it can be said that man is the only being wandering in the whole of creation to whom nothing is due by right. Notice by right. Because we give everything to the one who lives in our will. And since man is living outside of God's will, then the right to all kinds of things is gone. And the person living in the divine will is living in our home. We are living in the Blessed Trinity. We are living in our destiny already here on earth. So people living in the divine will are living on earth and in heaven at the same time. He's one of our family. Romans 8:14. Psalm 82, verse 6, Galatians 4, 7, Hebrews 2, 10. He's one of our family. The relations and the bonds of sonship that he possesses by living in the divine will give him the right to all of our goods. On the other hand, one who does not live of the life of my will has broken, and as though all at once, all the bonds, all the relations, and therefore he is held by us as something that doesn't belong to us. Now, I call that loose cannon. And it's dangerous. I'm using that language deliberately because of a message that's coming up. Not this one, the next one. Loose cannon. And loose cannon is extremely dangerous. It's not going in any particular direction. It can target something that is never meant to be targeted. It can kill something that should never be killed. It can damage stuff that should never be damaged. So it's actually very dangerous. And the human being outside of God's will is extremely dangerous. And we can be a danger to the human species as well. And so we actually become the destroyers of the earth when we're completely outside of God's will. That's why I'm using the term loose cannon. Jesus says, oh, if all knew what it means to break up with our will, that is to break the relationship, and into what abyss that they actually fall, they would tremble with fright, they would compete with one another to return into the kingdom of the eternal fiat, to take their place again assigned to them by God. Now, since that's the position of 90% of the human race at this moment, the question is, how do we get back? And it's answered in the next paragraph, that knowledge is the key to return to our origin. That's what the next paragraph is about. And that's why studying the writings is so very important. Now, my daughter, since my eternal goodness wants to give my kingdom of the supreme fiat once again, after man has so ungratefully rejected it, if you don't think that this is the greatest gift that I can give, what else would you think? It's absolutely incredible. But in order to give this gift, which is the kingdom of the divine will, I must form it, I must constitute it, I must make known that which up to now is not known in my will. And that's what he's doing with Louisa in all of these writings. And I must give such knowledge about it as to win those who will know them to love, appreciate and desire and come to live in the divine will. The knowledge will be the chain. All that plural stuff that you're reading, and people even refer to the knowledges, that's not English. The word knowledge is plural. Okay, and the people who translated this obviously didn't know enough to know that a plural word in English is completely different to a plural word in Italian. So knowledge is plural. The knowledge will be the chain, but it won't be imposed. In other words, the Lord hands you the way to come back, but he won't force it. And he won't force it because we are creatures of free will. Rather, they themselves willingly will allow themselves to be bound. So the knowledge will be the weapon and the conquering arrow which will conquer the new children of the supreme fiat. That's the weapon the Lord is using, knowledge. So notice the position of our intellect in the whole process. The Lord wants you to use your rational mind to see that what he is offering is the most incredible thing. Like you would look at someone offering you an extraordinary diamond and you say, my goodness, I mean, how could I own something like that? He wants us to use our intelligence on it and to appreciate the enormity of the gift that's actually being offered. But do you know what this knowledge actually possesses? It actually changes one's nature. Now, the way it's translated makes it difficult. It changes us. Each of us is a spirit in a body. It changes us into virtue, into good, and into divine will. Now, there's another key for you, okay? Because if we are studying these writings and taking them on board and letting the Lord work in us and through us, the divine will actually should be changing our very nature into virtue. Therefore, what is virtue? Love, joy, peace, they're the fruits, okay? So we have to be changed into love. We've got to be changed into compassion. We've got to be changed into peace so that we become the people who actually hold the Beatitudes of Jesus in our very being. We've got to be changed into good. So that means that no matter how much you will be persecuted, that you will not respond evil for evil. You'll be like Jesus on the cross. Father, forgive them. They don't realize what they're doing. So the divine will actually changes our whole being into virtue, good, and into holiness. It's really incredible. In such a way that they will possess them as their own property. Isn't that fantastic? So you're not just practicing a virtue. That is something outside of you. It's actually inside of you. You are peace reaching out to others. You are love reaching out to others. It's really fantastic. So in the next paragraph then, he talks about the shocking loss that Adam experienced in going against the divine will. Now, we've had this from various different angles before. And he says that only a divine person could actually repair a divine loss. And that Adam suffered incredibly from what he actually did when he realized the enormity of his sin, but he couldn't repair it. And yet he says that Adam did an awful lot of good to such an extent that one of the big questions about the book of Genesis is actually answered in this paragraph. I'll wait till we get there. It's wonderful. It's answered in such a simple way. It's fantastic. So on hearing this, Louisa said, "My love, Jesus, if this knowledge on your adorable will contains so much power, why didn't you manifest it to Adam? So that by making it known, letting him make it known to posterity, they would have loved and appreciated more a good so great that this would have disposed the hearts for the time when you, the divine repairer, would decree to give us the great gift of the kingdom of the divine fiat." Now, Louisa is confusing herself there. If Adam didn't fall, you weren't going to get a divine repairer. So she's thinking very much like an ordinary lay Catholic. I mean, if you had done this, then wouldn't everybody be ready for your coming as a redeemer? But if Adam hadn't fallen, you wouldn't need a redeemer. This is one of the questions that the Lord has allowed her to articulate, and they are our questions. They're not actually hers. So we get his answer to our questions. And Jesus resumed his teaching role, and he said, "My daughter, as long as Adam remained in the terrestrial Eden, living in the kingdom of the supreme will, he knew all the knowledge as much as it is possible for a creature of that which belonged to the kingdom that he possessed." Adam was not deprived. That would include Eve as well. They were not deprived of any knowledge. And it's very clear from Genesis chapter 2 that they had scientific knowledge. They had knowledge of the world of animals and plants and food and all the rest of it. They didn't need anybody to teach them. That's quite clear. The stories are given to us in such a simple way, we're inclined to dismiss them without realizing what's being said. So he had the knowledge. But as soon as he went out of the divine will, and beside that, I want you to put John 15:5, "Without me, you can do nothing." So as soon as he goes out to the divine will, his intellect is obscured, it says here. We usually say darkened. So you can't see or understand what you understood before. He lost the light of his kingdom, and he couldn't find the fitting words in order to manifest the knowledge he had acquired on the supreme will, because that very divine volition, which would hand to him the necessary terms to manifest to others what he had known, is missing in him. There's two things there. First of all, if Adam was to give this to anybody else, he couldn't do it on a purely human level. He needed divine help, and only the divine will could enable him to do it. This is volume 20, and for many volumes we've been listening to the Lord saying that he has enabled Louisa to articulate this material and put it down on paper to the point where he claims to be the author of it himself. So this has this double value here, which is very important. So once Adam went outside of that, he lost the ability to be able to articulate it. And in the early volumes, you hear Louisa often saying, "I experienced such and such, I have no words. Once I come back to myself, there's no way I can actually put it into words." And that's what St. Paul said to the Corinthians, that eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has the heart is capable of understanding the incredible things that God has prepared for us. We just can't do it by ourselves. But I'll give you Philippians 4:13, "I can do all things in Christ who gives me the strength." So the Lord can enable us to do it. We can't do it by ourselves. He continues then, and it's a very important point which he has said many times before, I only make a good known when I want to give it. But since you and I have the 36 volumes in our possession, that means he wants to give us everything. We have his own word for it here, and God is truth. However, even though Adam did not speak extensively about the kingdom of my will, he taught many important things on what regarded it. So much so that during the first times in history, that is Genesis 2-6, up to the flood, up to the time of Noah, the generations had no need of laws. That is something that the scholars are forever asking questions about. Did they just leave out the information? What laws did they follow in the early times? And Jesus says here, they didn't need laws. Adam lived, as you know, for 900 years. So he was able to see entire generations come into the world, and he was able to teach them many important things. Okay, so they needed no laws. There were no idolatries. Now watch this. Look at what's put in brackets, diversity of languages. If you know the story of Babel, again in early Genesis, you have the fact that the people were punished for their idolatry by a diversity of languages in which they wouldn't be able to speak to one another. Initially, everybody, Jesus said, recognized the one God with one single language. Now, one of the things that worries me about the European setup that we are in Ireland are part of is that they have built the European Parliament in imitation of the Tower of Babel deliberately. And outside of it, they have a big notice of many languages, one people. In other words, they think that in their rejection of God, their rejection of the church, their rejection of the divine will, that they can turn Babel back. Watch that space. God is going to deal with it. They cannot. It's not actually possible. First of all, there were no idolatries. There was no diversity of languages, but all recognized the one God in one single language. So that's Genesis 2-6. Because they cared more about my will. Look at that. It's the because that's terribly important. It's because they cared more about my will. And that's due to Adam's teaching. But as they moved away from it, now you have Nimrod coming into the situation. Nimrod was the very first anti-God figure in the Bible. And Nimrod is the one who persecuted Abraham for believing in the true God. And so God had to ask Abraham to leave that area and begin a journey of faith. And so you get the whole story of salvation started. But as they moved away from the divine will, idolatries arose, because if you refuse the true God, then you'll turn to anything. If you refuse true faith, you'll actually believe in any faith, which is what's happening in all countries today. And they'll even degenerate into worse evils. That means to get involved in the occult and all the degenerate behavior that comes from it. And this is why God saw the necessity of giving his laws. So that's where you start, first of all, with Abraham and the law of circumcision. And you have the Mosaic covenant. Okay. An explanation of this you will find in Romans chapter 5, verses 12 to 21, and Romans 7, verses 7 to 13, and Romans 13, verses 8 to 10. And one of the things that Paul says there is that the law was given to a people just like you would put children in school to try and, if I can use the word, civilize them, that if they kept the laws. For example, when you examine the Ten Commandments, what we call the Ten Commandments, they are called the Ten Words by the people of Israel. And when you examine them, you find that there was a formula given by God to very faulty people as to how they could live in peace with each other. Let me give you an example. If all of us were living together in the same area and I fulfilled the 10 words, 4 of those words have to do with God and 6 have to do with the neighbor. Love God and love your neighbor. So if I keep the 10 commandments, you can keep your God. You can keep your true religion. You can keep your worship of God. You can keep your husband or your wife. You can keep your property. You can keep your good reputation and everything else that is needed for life if I keep the commandments. you're completely safe from me. And if all of us keep these commandments, we're all safe from each other. And you don't have to distance from anybody. And that is the wonder of the laws that God actually gave to people. He actually showed us as very faulty human beings how we could survive on the planet. St. Paul is great in explaining that. So go to the next paragraph. So when someone does my will, they don't actually need law. Now, St. Augustine is great on that. Love God and do what you like. What you'll be doing is God's will. Romans 8, verses 1 to 39, the whole chapter. There's no condemnation for those in Christ Jesus because you're living at such a high plane. Laws are on the lower plane. Even look at a very simple example, and that is that people who live a fulfilled, happy life with love and service in it, they're not the people who get arrested and thrown into jail. It's the people who have chaotic lives who have got to be disciplined like that. So there's no condemnation for those who actually live in Christ Jesus. Those who live in the divine will have no need of laws because my will is life. It's life. And the divine will is our law. I've already given to you several times a statement of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, and that is, Lord, I choose whatever it is you choose for me. The divine will is my law. It might be something very useful to write down on a piece of paper and look at it every now and then. The divine will is my law. Okay. So the divine will is not only life, it's our law, it's everything for us. And so the importance of the kingdom of the supreme fiat is immense. I love it so much, Jesus said, that I am doing more than a new creation and redemption. In each one of us, he makes a new creation. That's 2 Corinthians 5:17. In fact, in creation, my omnipotent fiat was pronounced only 6 times. That's for the 6 days. I've had a most wonderful insight into that recently. Oh, it's incredible. I'll just hint at it. And that is when you go through Genesis chapter 1, which people think is boring, it says, and evening came and morning came the first day. It says the same thing about the other days. In other words, God was moving all the time from darkness to light. And it's the very first statement that was made. There was darkness over the deep, and then God created light. And then everything he did, he moved from darkness to light. And that actually is a picture of the whole of history. And he does that in each one of us as well. He takes each one of us from darkness of sin into the light of his grace and into the light of the divine will. And the light of the divine will is the fullness of day. When we are converted, it's just the dawn, and then you have the morning, and it's the fullness of day when you're in the divine will. Wonderful thing. So, in fact, in creation, he said, my omnipotent fiat was pronounced only 6 times in order to dispose it and issue everything absolutely well ordered. In redemption, I spoke, he said, and since I did not speak about the kingdom of my will, which contains infinite knowledge, there's no way you're going to have the fullness of this, and immense, because they're infinite goods. I did not have a very extensive subject with many words to say, because everything I taught was of a limited nature. Hence, the 4 Gospels are actually quite small. And it's quite amazing if you take the teaching of Jesus in the Gospels, it's actually quite small, and it's illustrated with his actions. It's fascinating. So he said it was a limited nature, and a few words were enough to make it known. But in order to make my will known, it takes much, my daughter. Its history is extremely long. It encloses an eternity with no beginning and no end. And therefore, as much as I speak, I always have something to say. So this is why I am saying, oh, how much more. I don't think Louisa could have coped if she knew that at volume 20, there was 16 more volumes. I don't think she could have handled that. Being more important than anything, the divine will contains more knowledge, more light, more greatness, more prodigies, and therefore many more words are actually needed. More so, since the more I make known, the more I expand the boundaries of my kingdom. There's the very important bit. The more he actually reveals to us, the more he's expanding the kingdom. And the more he operates within us, as we try to operate the kingdom of the divine will, he's expanding the boundaries of the kingdom within us as well. to give to the children who will possess it. So therefore, he said, everything I manifest about my will is a new creation. That's Isaiah 35, verses 8 to 10, Isaiah 43, verse 19, and Revelation 21, 5. Everything that I manifest about my will is a new creation that I make in my kingdom. In other words, he is creating this as he is speaking. Fascinating. If you go back to Genesis chapter 1 again and just try and take it in slow motion, you'll find he is creating light as he speaks. He is creating vegetation as he speaks. He is creating man as he speaks. It's fascinating. And I listened to a teaching from a Jewish Christian rabbi just the other day, and he said the whole history of the Bible is in the first seven words of the book of Genesis. Very first seven words. Now, in English, it's more than seven words. First line. It's fascinating. So he said, everything I manifest about my will is a new creation, and I make my kingdom to be enjoyed and possessed by those who have the good of knowing it. And so great attention is required on the part of those. Louise is manifesting it. Okay. Go on to the next message. And you'll find that the messages in chapter 20 are much longer than we've had in other volumes, because Louisa seems to have been released into actually saying everything that the Lord has been wanting her to say since volume 1. He's fought a long battle with her to say everything. This time he manages. So here in September the 20th, 1926, Louisa has an experience of just hesitating about something. And the Lord tells her that the whole of creation experienced that hesitation. And it was almost disaster because she's in there. There's only one will in the whole thing. He uses this to explain to us the danger of going out of the divine will, even for a moment. So having finished writing one book and having to start another one, must be volume 20, I felt the weight of writing, she said, and most embittered, I sighed. Now watch this. My sweet Jesus, moving in my interior, made himself seen, shaking his head and sighing. He said, my daughter, what is it? What is it? You don't want to write? And I, almost trembling in seeing him sigh because of me, said, my love, I want what you want. So she tries to correct her position immediately. It's true that I feel the sacrifice of writing, but for love of you, I will do everything. And Jesus added, my daughter, you have not understood well what it means to live in my will. It takes a lot to really get this. While you were sighing, he said, the creation, everyone, even myself, have sighed together with you, because there's only one will and the whole lot of them. We sigh together with you because for those who live in the divine will, all have one life, one act, one motion, one echo, one will. Sorry, I've tried to say that in English for you. The sentence here doesn't make sense. They cannot help doing the same thing together. They all do the same thing because it's the same will. Because God is the prime motion. And since all created things have come out of a motion full of life, there's nothing which does not possess this motion. And all in turn turn around this prime motion of their creator. So everything is around the divine will. So the whole of creation is in my will. Its round is incessant, rapid, orderly. And the one who lives in the divine will has her place of order in their midst. Now, you'll see why we started off with knowing your place in the kingdom. Because now she's discovering that if she even hesitates, it's like a planet shaking and threatening to go out of its orbit, which would be absolutely a major disaster. Have you ever wondered why they all stay in their place? How they don't fall out of the sky? Their round is incessant, rapid and orderly. And the one who lives in the divine will has her place of order in their midst, turning rapidly together with everyone without ever stopping. And you see, she stopped. My daughter, that sigh of unwillingness of yours has formed its echo in everyone. Look at the enormity of it. And do you know what they felt? They felt as if a constellation wanted to go out of its place. out of the order, out of the rapid round around their creator. And on seeing this celestial constellation as though going out of their midst, all were shaken and as though hampered in their round, but they were immediately restored by your prompt adhesion, continuing their rapid round with order, magnifying their creator, which keeps them classed to himself. Okay, if we go out of the divine will, he says, everything in creation is affected. Everything. And it's only because she came back quickly that it was like as if all the planets and everything experienced a wobble. Look how serious it is. But no matter how serious we are about the divine will, we don't really want to know it's that serious, do we? In the next paragraph then, Jesus explains what we lose by reverting back to the human will, even for a moment. What would you say if you saw a star going out from among the others and descending down below, in other words, a fallen star? You'd be terrified. Would you not say it has gone out of its place, it no longer lives the communal life with the others? It's a lost star. Such is the one who, living in my will, wanted to do her own. Now, I want to tell you how important that is, because in the Bible, a star is the image of the people of God. And you're told in Revelation 12:4 that 1/3 of the stars was pulled out of the sky by the dragon's tail. That means a major apostasy, which we're actually living through right now. That's how terrifying it is. So that means pulled down from the divine will, down to this earthy human stuff again. The person or the soul moves away from her place. And she goes down from the height of the heavens. She loses the communion of the celestial family. That is, first of all, the communion with the Most Blessed Trinity and the communion of all the angels and saints. She gets lost. Look at that. You're dealing with the prodigal son, and the human race is actually the prodigal son, Luke 15. She gets lost away from my will. That's the first thing. She gets lost, number two, away from communion with the celestial family. She gets lost, number three, from any strength. So she goes back into weakness. Number four, she gets lost from any sanctity. And therefore, number five, she gets lost from the divine likeness. Now, these are all the privileges you were told was given to Adam prior to his fall. And number six, she gets lost away from the order, number seven, lost from the harmony, and eight, she loses the rapidity of the round of her creator. It's an absolutely immeasurable loss, something that we actually find quite difficult to take on board. Therefore, be attentive, because in the kingdom of my will, there's no unwillingness. That needs to be underlined. There's another key for you. There's no bitterness. Everything is joy. I choose what you choose for me, Lord. That's what Saint Therese said. Everything is joy. There's no strain. You see, there should be no S there. Just not English. There's no strain. We would say no stress, no pressure. All is spontaneity, as if the creature actually wanted what God wanted. That's why I give you Saint Therese's thing. I choose what you choose for me. Okay, this has been explained and all the areas where you get lost. In the next paragraph, Louisa has a vision of Jesus with dislocated members of his body. And please realize that's the church. These are the stars fallen from the sky. And she sees the incredible disaster that it actually is. So she said, I was frightened in hearing this from my sweet Jesus, and I understood the great evil of doing one's own will. And I prayed him from the heart to give me so much grace as not to let myself do my own will. So we have to pray, Lord, deliver me from my will. And I prayed him from the heart to give me so much grace as not to let me fall an evil so grave. But while I was doing this, my beloved good came back, but he made himself seen with almost all of his members dislocated. Now notice the almost all. This is a terrible apostasy, okay, which gave him unspeakable pain. Now, you'll remember that in the Hours of the Passion, in the scourging of Jesus, Louisa explains that pieces of Jesus' flesh fell from his body and that they were lost souls. Now, here you have dislocated members here. So almost all of his members are dislocated. And throwing himself into my arms, he told me, "My daughter, these dislocated members, which give me so much pain, are all the souls who do not do my will. By coming on earth, I constituted myself the head of the human family, and they are my members." I want to give you 1 Corinthians 12, verses 12 to 30, in which Paul describes us as the body of Christ. And I want to give you Romans 6, verses 3 to 4. We are all members of the body of Christ. We were all baptized into him. But these members were formed, joined, bound by means of the vital humours of my will, because everything comes from the divine will. As the divine will flows in them, they are placed in communication with my body and they are strengthened, each one in its place. So this strength that he's talking about is what traditionally we call fortitude. I always describe this fortitude as the steel girders they put into these huge buildings to enable them to survive hurricanes and terrible storms. Well, the strength that comes to us through the divine will enables us to survive the hurricanes of our lives. Okay, my will, he said, like a compassionate doctor, not only makes its vital and divine humours flow in order to form the necessary circulation between head and members, but it forms its perfect bandaging in order to help the members bound and firm under its head. So the Lord is the one that's enabling the divine life to flow from himself into each one of the members and to hold us firmly there in this wonderful relationship. Now, since my will is missing in the ones who refuse to go into it, that which gives the heat, the blood, the strength and the command from the head in order to render the members operative is missing. That which does the bandaging if they are dislocated is missing. Everything's missing. It can be said that all communications between the members and the head are broken. That's very important. And they remain in my body to give me pain, because a broken bone in your body causes you immense pain. It is my will alone that places the creator and the creature and the redeemer and the redeemed, the sanctifier and the sanctified ones in accord and communication. Only the divine will can do it. Without the divine will, it is as if creation and redemption were nothing for them, because that which makes the life and the goods that they contain flow is actually missing. The very sacraments will serve them as condemnation. Oops. That is straight out of 1 Corinthians 11, verses 28 to 32. The very sacraments will serve them as condemnation because, since my will is missing in them, that which breaks the veil of the sacraments, in other words, enables you to actually get the grace that's in them, so as to give them the fruit and the life they contain, that too is missing. Therefore, my will is everything. Without it, our most beautiful works, our greatest prodigies, remain extraneous to the poor creatures. That means unavailable. Because the divine will alone is the depository of all our works. And therefore, only through the divine will can these be given birth for creatures. You notice they get no value out of the sacraments or anything else. It's really frightening. Oh, if all knew what it means to do or not do my will, they would all place themselves in accord with it in order to receive all possible imaginable goods and the transmission of the very divine life. So in the divine will, you receive everything that God has for you. Outside of it, you can't receive anything. That's scary. So Louisa gives a very wonderful prayer that you should pray on waking. I love to do this even during the night when I wake up. It's just beautiful. Then after this, Louisa said, "I was doing my usual acts in the Supreme Will. And since the day was almost dawning," because she wrote her stuff during the night, "I was saying, my Jesus, my love, the day is now beginning. And in your will, I want to go around through all creatures so that in rising from their sleep, they may all rise in your will, to give you the adoration of all human intelligences, the love of all human hearts, and the rising of all of their works and of all their beings into the light which this day will make shine over the generations. It's just a beautiful prayer. Make it your own. I make my own version of it. While I was saying this and other things, my sweet Jesus moved in my interior and told me, my daughter, in my will there are neither days nor nights, because she said, Lord, it's the dawn and I want to pray at dawn. So there's neither day nor night. There's no dawn and there's no sunset. It's only an eternal day. That means that when we start truly living in the divine will, we have already entered the eternal day that we will have after death. We've already entered it. So I want to give you Revelation 21, 23, Revelation 22, 5, and Psalm 121, verse 4. Psalm 121, verse 4 says that the one who governs Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. The Revelation ones are talking about the way people will live in the divine will in the New Jerusalem, and they will not need sunlight or moonlight because the Lord will be their light. So it's only the fullness of light. And one who lives in the divine will can say, there are no nights for me, but it is always daylight, and therefore this is my day. This is wonderful. This is my day. And we can't in English say one is my day, but you can sure say this is my day. Now, when the Lord says this is my day, it is Yom Yahweh, Y-O-M, and the sacred name Yahweh. Yom is a day in Hebrew. So this is my day. And as she operates in order to do my will and to carry out her life in the divine will, she forms as many more lights, more refulgent within the day of her life, which render more glorious and more beautiful the day of my will in which you live. Do you know for whom day and night, dawn and sunset are formed? For one who now does my will, now her own. If she does mine, she forms the day. If she does her own, she forms the night. And so you find people who are living at a lower level than living in the divine will, that they can have times of real darkness and times of brilliant light as well. So it's really our decision. Heaven is perennial day forever, and hell is perennial night forever. For one who does not fully live in the divine will, but does my will only with strain, that is with pressure and stress, they form the dawn. In other words, there's hope that the day might actually come. For one who laments, that is the complainers. And if you know anything about the book of Numbers, you'll know that God hates complaints. For one who laments about what the divine will disposes and wants to withdraw, they form the sunset, the end of this incredible experience. For one who does not do my will at all, it is perennial nighttime, the beginning of that eternal night of hell that will never end. There's a sober ending for tonight's readings, but there's quite a lot to ponder on. So thank you for being with us. God bless.